Playing Through with Froggy, Brian Golf, and Wacker.
It's another edition of the Playing Through podcast. Brian Wacker off playing golf again today. He's going to be a pro. As much as he plays golf, he either should be really good or just give it up and take up tennis. Froggy at Froggy Radio on Twitter. The podcast, follow us anytime at Play Through Golf and at Brian Golf at B-R-Y-A-N Golf on Instagram. Give us a follow today. Today's a special treat.
So special.
This is somebody we wanted to have on the podcast for quite a while, and he's a busy guy. He's got a lot going on, but before we start the podcast, I just want his signature phrase to start the pod, and you're going to know who it is.
Let's do this!
Yes!
Michael Breed!
Michael Breed!
What's up, boys?
Hey. How are you, Michael?
Couldn't be better. How about you guys?
We're doing really good, but I'm telling you, you are so busy. I know you did your thing on Golf Channel with the Golf Fix and all that. Now you've got so much more going on. You're with Golf Digest. You're doing your own show on Facebook. You got the SiriusXM thing. So tell us, what all is Michael Breed doing, and how can we get Michael Breed?
Well, listen, first of all, it's a pleasure to join you guys on the podcast. It is a busy time for me, and I'm enjoying it. I've got my show on SiriusXM, a new breed of golf on Monday through Friday mornings from 8 to 10. Then I'm also doing my own instructional show on michaelbreed.com. You can find that on Facebook, which is at Michael Breed Golf. You can also pick it up on Twitter, and we're also dumping it up onto my website, which is just at Michael Breed or michaelbreed.com. So I've got all that going on. Plus I've got my academy going on. Plus I'm teaching a bunch of people, and it's a great time. It's a fun time. It's busy time. But the best part about it for me is that I'm home with my family, that I'm not out running all over the country, following the circus called the PGA Tour, or traveling up and down the East Coast, going back and forth from Orlando to New York. It's a great time for me, and obviously a great time for my family. We've got two young boys who are 5 and 6, so it's perfect. So other than that, I'm just kind of sleeping in every morning.
Yeah, right. Now, I saw your new studio. Your new studio looks absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. I love the 360 range. I love the fact that you can have the putting there can be up and down. You're hitting uphill lies and downhill lies. That really is a state-of-the-art studio you've got there.
It is a state-of-the-art studio, and it's getting better every single day. We've got so many neat things that are taking place. Obviously, the stage that you're talking about, the green stage, I have the ability to hit breaking putts. I can hit double breaking putts even, thanks to the people at Zen Oracle for that. And then About Golf has created a range. One of the big problems that I had down at Golf Channel was when I was on the range and I wanted to go hit a short shot, we literally had to stop the show and then get out of the range, go over to a golf course, pick a hole, set up the shot, do all that. Now we don't have to do anything. All I do is my assistant Greg hits this one thing and boom, we jump over to a short game area, or we go over to we have a range there that is all iron. So shots go from 42 yards and it's bunkered and all that other stuff up to 212 yards. I also have an iron range that's just, it's literally a green that is 200 yards long. So if I want to hit a little chip of 15 yards, or I want to hit a 6-iron, I can do it out on that range. It's phenomenal. And then the other really cool thing is, thanks to my friends at Microsoft, I've got Microsoft Surface Hubs and Surface Pros in here. I can diagram literally anything. And in the coming weeks and months, we'll be able to dump in golf swings from PGA Tour players or even individuals that are wondering about, like, I got a text message last night from some guy down in Florida was wondering what was wrong with his golf swing.
And you know what? Michael didn't want to use all of his text data and text him back all that was wrong with it. So he didn't tell me, because it's bad.
You know what it is, Froggy? It's cautious. It's a cautious golf swing. What I want you to do is let go a little bit. That's why I wanted to talk to you about that. It's like a guy, you want to find that fairway. I want you to bomb it out there like McIlroy. I want you to hit it out there like John Rahm. Let's go. Let go.
It is very cautious. So with the Masters just finishing up, and I know you worked at Augusta National Golf Club, and so I know you know that property like the back of your hand. What makes Augusta so special? What makes it what it is, and what makes it so difficult?
My wife actually asked this question to me, by the way,
right,
during the Masters. She asked me, what makes the Masters so special? And she didn't mean it like, why does everybody make such a big deal out of this? It was, and I didn't have an answer for her. And so I went on Instagram, made everybody, you know, give me an answer, and they all gave me great answers. I'm very curious to see how your answer, because I know the tournament and Augusta National means so much to you. I'm curious to see what your answer is.
Well, so one of the things is the history of its founders, Cliff Roberts, Bobby Jones, and Dr. McKenzie, the architect. Those individuals are big names in the game of golf. And while Cliff Roberts isn't somebody that maybe we would be familiar with, if you rewind the tape to 1930, he was one of the really important people in the Northeast, which is where this sort of the game of golf really kind of, I'll say, grew in the U.S. in three cities. New York was one, Philadelphia was one, and Chicago was the other. And Cliff Roberts was a big part of that whole thing. The other thing is Bobby Jones. Now, Bobby Jones is the only individual to have two ticker tape parades in New York City. There have been teams that have done it many, many times, New York Yankees, et cetera, and there have been individuals who have had it once. But Bobby Jones is the only one that's had it twice. And it's an interesting thing that back in 1930, this guy that never turned professional, was always an amateur, and very well respected down, you know, he's from Atlanta, Georgia, very well respected down in that area, but also across the country and across the world. And so you take all that and you put that into this melting pot, and then you take the interest of the game of golf and major championships in golf, and now take the major and put it at one spot every single year. And now all of a sudden you have lifted this club to this stature of unbelievable level. Then put into the soup a little bit more stuff, right? So what's also in there as well is the respect that people have for the way that golf course is kept. The way people look at Augusta National is a private club, which means you can't really get there to play it. So while we admire, say, Pebble Beach, we really hold Augusta National in this high esteem because nobody can get there to play it.
Right.
And you walk onto this property and there's this hallowed ground that you look at and you go, oh my gosh, I can't believe it's as beautiful as it is. And it is. It's botanical. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I had somebody tell me that TV doesn't do it justice, that when you get there, it's like walking into a postcard.
It is the most perfect place that you've ever been. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's the most perfect place that you've ever been. And what I felt when I was there was this thing. It's hard to even describe it, but it's this emotional experience that goes through your soul that you literally feel like you have gone to heaven. It's the most unimaginable thing. And so you walk differently, you talk differently, you behave differently because you cannot believe that you're actually in this spot.
Michael, the other night I spoke to Jason Taylor, former Miami Dolphin great and NFL Hall of Famer, and he said to me, I never forget this, he said, at night when the sun goes down, Augusta National is where God plays golf.
it's honestly like nothing you've ever been to. I mean, I've been to Yankee, I've been to Wrigley, I've been to Fenway, I've been everywhere. This place is like nothing you've ever been to or seen, and it's also not even close. This place is so much better. So the combination of that, and then the people that have won there, the way they talk about it, the way it's presented, it's just magical. It really is. It's just magical. So those are all the reasons, and then some, why that place is as special as it is.
Seems, too, like every year at the Masters, there's always something amazing that happens. Putts go in from, you know, nowhere, you know, out of nowhere, and you're just sitting there going, like, why does this always happen here at Augusta? Why does somebody always make the putt or hit the shot at Augusta National on Sunday?
How about the holes in one that we've seen on the 16th hole? We've had some ridiculous number of holes, and we saw another one yesterday on on Sunday with Charlie Hoffman. We see holes in one. We see miraculous shots. We see Tom Watson winning the par three contest and Jack Nicklaus's grandson making a hole in one.
That was the best thing.
It was.
Honestly.
Right.
So cool.
It was.
Right.
I got an update on my phone. It says Watson wins the par three. And then it said Tom Watson. I'm like, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
It is unimaginable stuff. And that happens. It is one of those things in life where, you know, I'll give you an example. When I worked really hard to become a head golf professional. And when I got my head professional job, I remember after about a month going, this is it. Like, this is all that I worked for. And this is what this feels like and looks like. At Augusta National, you never have that feeling. You build it up. And then it surpasses what you thought it was going to be. This year, we came into the Masters and we were thinking all these players are playing great. Bubba Watson's playing great, and Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods, and Dustin Johnson, and Jason Day's won, and all these people have won, and all these people are playing great. Rory McIlroy then goes out and wins at Arnold Palmer, and you go, this can't get any better. It can't get any better. And then you go, and the tournament gets better.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And Patrick Reed wins. You know, speaking of Tiger Woods, Michael, what is it that Tiger is doing differently now in his swing that is making it so that at 42 years old with spinal fusion, he is able to swing the club at this rate, and it looks as if he is primed to win and do it very, very soon?
Well, what I would say about Tiger is, you know, Tiger's been an injured guy for a long, long time. We probably have not seen a body of Tiger Woods that is without pain, and quite honestly, you know, he's been taking medicine to relieve that pain. So his body has been going through some stuff for, you know, 10, 15 years. And all of a sudden now he goes through this surgery, gets it right finally, and the freedom that he has in his golf swing is quite honestly because the freedom that he has with his body. His body is now able to do things that it wasn't able to do before. And I think that all of us were sitting there going, well, you know what, he's washed up, he can't do it. But let me tell you something. First of all, look at what human bodies have been able to do in the game of golf since everybody started to really take care of themselves and train. It is not uncommon for 47, 48-year-old. Look at what Freddie Couples has done at Augusta National. I mean, last year, he was right there at 50-whatever,
right.
6, 7 years old. Tom Watson almost won an Open Championship in 2009 when Stuart Sink won in a playoff.
Yep.
Tom Watson makes par at the 18th. He's the oldest major winner ever. So you kind of look at all this stuff and you go, people are in better shape into their 40s and 50s. So it's not uncommon that we would see a guy that's basically worked hard on making sure that his body was in shape, running and all that other stuff, working out. It's not uncommon that his body would be able to perform once his body was free of injury, which is what we're seeing now. And so I think, you know, there will be and I think this week is the week where Tiger is finally now, in my opinion, he's jumped the hurdle of, man, it's great to be out playing again. I think he's now at a point where he's thinking to himself, okay, now I want to win, and I want to win a major, and his brain is locked in. I do think that Tiger needs to really rethink this idea of, I'm going to go through the rest of my career without a coach. I think he needs a coach. I think that Tiger this week at Augusta was not swinging well. His club was stuck behind him and under the plane, which is what we saw Rory do on Sunday. And I think having a coach there with you is going to make it a little bit easier for Tiger to make those changes a little bit faster, gain a little bit more confidence, and shoot 70 when he's playing poorly instead of shooting 73 or 75. And in a major championship, when you go out there and you shoot a 73 or a 75, well, you know what? Now you've got your back to the wall, and that's where Tiger is.
I'm going to take advantage of this moment here because you said Tiger Woods getting that club under the plane and stuck behind
yeah.
him, which, you know, in practice rounds and on the range, man, you can overcome that all day. But when the pressure's on, that's going to creep up. And I noticed this in my own game because I get really under plane, and a lot of my issues is I get that right hip and my right butt cheek working out into the right. I'm a decent player with that, but I've got to be on. I've got to time it. So what does Tiger Woods have to do to correct that and get on the plane, or even coming to where he's, it's the opposite, and he's more, you know, over the plane instead of under it.
So, yeah. So what I would say is this. I think for Tiger, it's not – so for some people, it's a matter of whether their body can physically do it. In other words, you know, you take a normal person that goes to work every day and sits in a chair every day and does all that stuff and doesn't get into the gym very often, and the reason why they wouldn't be able to get that club out in front of them or stay on plane rather than getting under the plane is the glutes don't have the strength and the hamstrings don't have the length, and all of a sudden you're not able to support your body in certain positions. You can't maintain balance. That's not the issue with Tiger. To me, the issue with Tiger is he fears hitting it left. And when you fear hitting it left, what happens is that the game is so funny because in order for you to not hit it left, you have to swing left. And in order for you to not hit it left, you've got to really feel that club coming out and over, almost like you were going to swing the club to the left. And so you have to get reps and you have to get trust in order for you to be able to make that move and know that it's not going to go left, right? It's the idea that when you're spinning a ball, that in order for you to spin the ball, the ball, in order to curve to the right, the ball has to be spinning to the right. And to give you an idea, a clockwise rotation, right? So in order for me to create a clockwise rotation, I have to have the club or my hand or whatever going across to the left to create a right spin.
Right.
Right? Yep. You swipe across it, it creates the right spin. So in order for you to be able to not hit it left, you have to swing to the left to create a right spin. And that's the part that takes a little bit of time because you have to you have to build in the trust. And Tiger's a guy. There are some people that have the ability to just go out and play golf and not worry about the practice part. They can rationalize in their mind, hey, you know what? I've done this 1,000 times. Freddie Couples is the guy who comes to my mind. Freddie Couples could not pick up a golf club for a month and a half and go out and shoot 62 because that's just the way Freddie works. There are other people, myself included, who have to have put in the work in order for them to trust what, in fact, they've done or are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would say is that Tiger is one of those individuals. If you look at Tiger's history, it's always about a 12 to 18-month period before Tiger, when he's working on emotion, is able to do it without really working that hard, where it really comes in. And I think that Tiger now, whatever he's doing, he just doesn't trust it when he gets into that major situation, a major championship, which is what this mm-hmm. is all about for Tiger. He wins his majors. I would tell you that I don't know that Tiger is as focused on winning a tournament as much as he is focused on winning a major.
Well, you just kind of solved Tiger, and by way, you solved me because I need to go do squats because I know my glutes just aren't, they're not strong enough, and my hamstrings probably aren't long enough. So I'm actually done here. I'm going to walk out. I'm going to the gym. I'm going to do some deadlifts. I'm going to do some squats.
Yep.
Well, Froggy actually last night, he called me, and he's like, man, what do you think of this? Tiger Woods, one of the first things he said that he's going to do the next 3-4 weeks when he takes time off from golf and tournament golf, is getting the gym and strengthen his body back up. What do you think of this? And I was like, genius.
My issue with that was, I know before, and Michael, tell me if I'm wrong, I think maybe there was a time he spent maybe a little too much time in the gym and got too bulky, and instead of being limber and instead of getting his muscles long, his muscles got a little too big and a little too tight.
And here's what I would say. What I would say is that you can argue that in his workout stuff, the things that he's done for training, you can argue that he hurt himself in training. A lot of people have said he's gotten too big or he was too strong, too massive across the chest. I don't know that I necessarily believe that. What I happen to believe is that we're dealing with an injured body. And the injured body, whatever it is, whether it's Freddie Couples at his back or whether it's Tiger and a knee or a back or whatever it is, the injured body just isn't going to perform. That's why what I saw Tony Finau do was phenomenal. Right. Is really what it was.
It really was.
After he dislocates his ankle, and then the most remarkable thing to me is he pops it back in like it was like clipping his fingernails.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he's out playing great golf, and then goes and shoots 66 on Sunday.
He got a top 10 out of it. I mean, that's amazing.
And right. He gets to come back guaranteed to the Masters
no matter what he does.
Year. so cool.
And I guarantee you he's not going to run on the par three backwards at any time.
No, it'll be funny when he gets – because, you know, maybe he gets another hole-in-one. How awesome would that story be? And his reaction, almost like Spieth yesterday when he hit it on the green on 12. He lifts his hands up, you know, like, yes.
Did you see Tiger?
I love it.
I think it was
he did the same thing,
Saturday.
Yeah.
I think it was Tiger. He finally hit it. He had hit it in the water Thursday, hit it in the water Friday. On Saturday, it was in the green. He did, like, the big safe signal, like, at least I finally hit it dry.
I don't think you do that. I don't think you do that in any other tournaments other than the Masters. No. I just think it's something they know that the patrons respect what is happening at that golf course and at that tournament.
You know, I had thought that shot on 12 had really sort of left Jordan's mind, and quite honestly, it hadn't. And when he was in his interview, he said, you know, that was a big shot for me. I needed that shot in order for me to move forward. I've got this positive thing in my mind. He's now able to go back into his Rolodex of memories of shots and go, well, you know what? On that Sunday when I shot 64, I was able to hit that shot onto the green, left of the flag, and make it for two. And that, I think, kind of erases the shots that he's been hitting on the right-hand side and finding Race Creek there.
I thought it was interesting when they were talking about the tournament and number 12 specifically. Just because of all of the bad things and good things, but all of the bad things that have happened on that hole over the years, that everyone has demons on that hole because they all have this Rolodex of terrible memories that they've seen.
Right.
You know, where if the wrong player or the player is in the wrong mindset and the wrong idea pops in their mind going up to number 12 tee, you know, it could end bad for them just based off that.
You know, Mike, I want to ask you, how much of this game, and I know that a lot of people have said it's a game played in the 6 inches between your ears, how much of this game is mental and how much of it is fundamentals?
At the very highest level, it's Yogi Berra. I think Yogi Berra said, the longer I'm around, what I find out is 90% of this game is 100% mental or something like that.
Right.
That he said. I think when you play any game at the very highest level, it's a mental game. I think that every single person that plays the PGA Tour, and particularly when you're out on when you're in the Masters, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, they all can do it. They might not all swing the club at the same rate of speed, but they can all hit the shots. They can all make the putts. They can all hit the bunker shots. I think it boils down to the mind. And I, quite frankly, I think that's what Rory McIlroy ran into yesterday, where, you know, he hits that tee shot at one and then he misses the putt at two and then he comes up short with the wedge at three and then he bails right on five, both the driver and the approach. And when that's all said and done, you look at this and you go, and this guy just couldn't get the club face to get square. He was just a little bit behind the whole time. And to me, it's a matter of him thinking about, if I win this, it will be a career grand slam. It has zero to do with anything other than his thought of, what happens should I be successful?
Right.
And, you know, the hardest part and the thing that Patrick Reed talked about was, I stuck to my game plan. I didn't get ahead of myself. I knew people were going to make a rush at me, whatever. I didn't worry about any of that stuff. What I worried about, forgive me, what I worried about was making sure that I got done what I needed to get done.
Right. You know, as amateurs, this is kind of a two-part question. When an amateur goes to the golf course before their round, or when they go to just practice, what should we practice, and what is the average amateur doing wrong when they go to the driving range?
Well, first, the average amateur is going to the driving range, and they're giving themselves 15 or 20 minutes to hit it like a tour pro before they go and tee off. Because they don't go there, they don't give themselves enough time. So that's one thing. One thing that most average amateurs don't do is, because they get to the golf course with a little bit of time, they don't stretch. And so what I tell my students all the time is, when you're driving wherever you're driving, stretch your neck. When you get to a stoplight, try to stretch your back a little bit. You're sitting in a chair where your hips are kind of locked. Try to get some rotation with your upper body and loosen up a little bit. Do what you can do to loosen up your wrists just as you're driving. Take your wrists and forearms and create some rotation so that when you're in the car, the 15 minutes that it takes you to get to where you're going, you can be stretched somewhat. And that will give you more time. The other thing I would tell you is, when you go to the range, don't bring every club in your bag. Bring a wedge, a 6-iron, and a driver. Make some swings with your 6-iron and wedge so that you loosen up. You're swinging a little bit of a heavier thing. Then hit a couple of chips, hit a couple of 6-irons, hit a couple of drivers. All you're really trying to do is get loose. Then what I tell people is you got 10 minutes left before your tee time. Go hit a couple of chips and pitches and go hit a few putts, because the truth of the matter is most people are going to miss a lot of fairways, a lot of greens. The average person's probably going to hit, if you're an average player, you're a 15 or 16 handicap, you're probably going to hit 2, maybe 3 greens around, which means you're going to have far more chips and pitches than you're going to have first putts. Your first putts are not going to be of length. If you hit a good chip or pitch, now all of a sudden you have the ability of making a par or a bogey instead of making a double bogey or worse. And so work on some short game stuff. Don't go to the range and spend as much time on the range. That would be what I would tell most people. And what I find is that actually that helps.
So you say most people there, and I feel like I know what you're going to say when I ask you this, but I'm going to take it to a next step, or I guess the next step up, and that is the amateur that competes. Okay, for me, I like to compete as much as I possibly can. I don't get to, obviously, because, you know, I got a wife, I got a 7-year-old, so, you know, I can't compete as much as I want. I do have a lot of opportunity to practice, which is more than most can say, I think, you know, that have a full-time job. I think it helps working in the golf industry. Scratcher better, a player that's out there, they're, you know, shooting around par, sometimes they'll go under, some, you know, 76, 77 was a bad day. It's the worst score you could have shot, okay?
Yep.
Where does that player need to focus?
So here's what I would tell you. If you go out onto the PGA Tour week to week, the players are spending about 70% of their practice time in the short game area.
Wow.
Right? And that tells you what they think. Now, look, truth be told, they're loosening up on the range. They're not necessarily working on golf swings. Somebody that's been away from the game, Tiger's probably spending a little bit more time in the full swing area than he is in the short game area at this point. But the guy that is like you, that's right around par or shooting a little over par, if you go back over to your round, one of the things that you're going to find is that your course management probably wasn't as good as it could have been. In other words, you look at the way Patrick Reed played the 11th hole at Augusta yesterday. He's in the final round of the Masters. He hits a tee shot on the right. Instead of trying to hit a miraculous shot and run it up onto the green, he hits his golf ball over to the left to get an angle on a back left hole, a back right hole location, wedges it up there to about 5 or 6 feet. He subsequently misses the putt, but it was a very easy bogey. It wasn't like he was hitting high-stress shots. What I find most players do is when they play poorly, that's when they take their greatest risks. They hit it into the trees, and now all of a sudden they think they're going to hit a low-curving, slicing shot underneath a limb that's 4 feet off the ground.
Right.
They're going to hit it around that thing. Then they're going to elevate it to 120 feet and get it to stop on the green to a right hole location. It's ridiculous. And what ends up happening is you're making double bogeys and triple bogeys and shooting 76 or 7. If you just wedge out to – if you went and played a round of golf where every time you got in trouble, you hit your shot to a comfortable yardage, 85, 95, whatever is a comfortable yardage in that – between 100 yards and 75 yards, you hit to a comfortable yardage at that point, and then you hit that shot up under the green, you're probably going to give yourself 15 to 10-foot putts for whatever, par or birdie, and you're going to make a fair number of those. And you're also going to make a few birdies. And so what ends up happening is instead of making double bogeys and triple bogeys, you're making a bogey or a par or a birdie on a hole where you played a par five and you've hit an errant tee shot, but you laid up to a comfortable yardage. And so for me, what I would tell you is course management is a really important thing. And players that are of that talent that you're at, you can do that without working that hard. All you have to do is think about it.
I want anyone, I don't do this normally, I want anyone listening to this podcast right now to rewind it and listen to what Michael Breed just said all over again. Because I can tell you from firsthand experience that is the way the game is supposed to be played.
Oh, absolutely.
If you want to play good, smart golf, that's the way the game is supposed to be played.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to take your medicine. You hit a bad shot, get it back in the fairway, and give yourself a chance. If you didn't hit it straight off the tee box where you had no problems, and now you're under a tree limb, and all of a sudden you think you're going to be Dustin Johnson and shape it, or Bubba Watson, and curve it around, it's right. Not going to happen.
I was going to say, there's two things that people need to understand. First, they have to remember that they're where they are because of how they play.
Right. Right? Yeah.
Nobody that's really good is hitting it into the trees all the time.
Right.
So you got to remember that you're not very good when the thing goes in there. And the other thing is this. You don't have to play like a tour pro to think like a tour pro. And what tour pros will do, they will take a calculated risk, but it's calculated. And when they don't have a chance, they're going to play smart, and that's what they're going to do. And when they don't play smart, take Jason Day last year at the PGA Championship on Saturday. He bails out right, hits his tee shot on 18 behind a tree. Then he starts trying to do all kinds of different things, and he makes an 8 on the final hole and plays his way right out of his opportunity to win the PGA Championship
because
he didn't think. And what happens is that if you've got somebody that is focusing on understanding – you know what, if I just do this and then I do that, I'm going to give myself a putt for par. And if I give myself a putt for par, now if I don't make it, I'm probably going to make a bogey. And I'm going to eliminate double and triple and quadruple bogeys. And when you start to do that, that's how you shoot low scores. You don't make a lot of birdies. People don't make a lot of birdies. If you make one birdie a round, you're doing really, really, really good.
Right.
So let's avoid putting ourselves in a situation where we're making double and triple and quadruple bogeys because we don't have the birdie accumulation to offset that really high score on that one hole.
Right. Yeah. You know, Michael, something I know that you've weighed in on before, and it's been an issue this year, and luckily I'm very thankful it was not an issue the past weekend at the Masters, is fan involvement, fans heckling players, players having issues with fans. Where do you stand on this?
So, you know, I know that in other sporting events, the mindset is I'm rooting for this team or I'm rooting against that team, right? We have a home team. And the idea in other sporting events is if somebody makes a bad play, that's great, right? We cheer for the penalty. If you're a New York Giants fan like I am and we're playing the Miami Dolphins, and the Dolphins jump offside on a 3rd and 4 play.
Which is probably very likely, by the way.
Exactly. But I'm going to cheer, and I'm going to go, this is great.
Right.
Because now I get a first down. So I immediately am rooting against the other team.
Right. You're rooting against the other team as much as you're rooting for your team.
Or right. In golf, my opinion is we are there to admire the talent. And we're not rooting for or against. We might be rooting for somebody, but not against somebody. Because there's so many somebodies out there. It's the only sport where in a given day, there's 144 golf balls in play at the same time.
Right.
Or 72 golf balls in play at the same time.
Right.
In every other sport, there's one ball in play. And that's it. There's one puck in play. There's one football or one baseball or one tennis ball in play, and you're rooting for somebody else. In golf, there's 72 golf balls in play. And for as far as I'm concerned, I want to admire the amazing shot, the talent level of somebody that can do something that, quite frankly, I can't do. And that, to me, is what going to a tournament is all about. It's also not, for me, the idea that I go to a tournament to go buy a bunch of beer or drinks and get drunk. That, to me, is not how I want to reflect upon my experience at Augusta National.
Correct.
And one of the reasons why you don't see the behavior at Augusta National that you might see in Phoenix is because, A, there's a respect for that piece of property and those individuals that are playing in it. B, if you behave in a certain way that is unbecoming, they'll kick you out.
Right, as they should.
I love it.
As they should.
Right. And so when it's all said and done, there's a lot of reasons why people behave a way that they behave at Augusta National. And that includes that if they kick you out, you're never going to go back there again. And the people that gave you your badge or that you bought your badge from or however you got it, they're losing that badge too. There's ramifications to the behavior.
Wow.
And what I love is, and what I have a really difficult time with personally in what I see in our country is we want to blame other people for our mishaps.
Oh, yeah.
If we spill hot coffee on our lap, we're going to blame it on McDonald's for doing it, and we're going to sue, and we're going to win.
You're
and
right.
At Augusta National, you behave like a fool, you get treated like a fool.
Absolutely.
Because it's foolish. The behavior is foolish.
Agree
and
with
that's
you.
One of the reasons why I love it.
You know what? You're exactly right. We do. We live in a society of it's not my fault. Of
no.
I'll blame somebody else. It's got to be somebody else's fault. And
right. You know. I got hosed.
Right.
I got hosed.
Right.
You know what?
They shouldn't have sold me that beer. I wouldn't have acted this way if they didn't sell me the beer.
Right.
It's not that guy's fault. It's
right.
your fault.
You actually let me drink 10 beers in an hour, and I behaved foolishly? That's got to be your fault, because
right.
it can't be mine.
I don't know. I've been watching Michael Breed for years. I've been listening to A New Breed of Golf every day on my way home to work. It's Michael Breed's fault that I'm not, you
right.
know, plus three handicap.
Exactly
I'm,
right.
I'm
exactly
Michael Breed's fault.
Right. I've DVR'd every golf fix.
Yeah.
I know it all, and it's Michael
yep.
Breed's fault I can't putt.
I'm telling you, listen, I can't wait. For the lawsuit to happen that sues a car manufacturer for having too many things in the car that distract you, and that's why you ran into the bridge abutment.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, you're doing your makeup or you're combing your hair
yes.
and checking yourself in the rearview mirror.
No.
Or driving with your knee while you're drinking your coffee and smoking your right, whatever. It has to do with the fact that you can turn the radio and get a map and get, I mean, come
yeah.
on.
Right.
Hey, our podcast is now
right.
complete because I do, Michael, I've listened to your show, you know, on SiriusXM ever since I, you know, got my, I'm glad you're on 5 days a week now and a little bit longer,
thank
especially
you.
Now that I've got an hour and a half commute that happens to start at 8:05 after I drop my son off at school every day.
Right.
So it works out pretty good. But I was going to say, our pod wasn't going to be complete today if we didn't get Breed going off about somebody doing their hair or doing their makeup
that's
while
right.
they're driving down the road. It's like Let a weekly occurrence on his show, and I love it.
I'm telling you, I'm driving to work today, and I watched this guy on a bicycle go through a red light, and I turned to my assistant, Greg, and I go, you know, this is another thing I can't stand. Bicyclers think they own the roads. They have a thoroughfare that we don't have. They just go through red lights and nobody writes them a ticket.
No.
It drives me nuts.
It is. It's insane.
It scares me. It's just it's just dangerous.
And
to
if
me.
You hit that bicyclist who ran the red light, it's your fault.
Yeah. Your
All
fault.
Day.
And
your
oh,
fault.
By the way, that little tin cap that they have on their head called a helmet, that's going to do some real saving. Let me tell you.
Exactly.
That's going to save that person, no doubt.
Oh, God.
Well, Michael Breed, tell everybody one more time, where can we find you? How can we get everything Michael Breed?
So you can get all my video stuff on michaelbreed.com or on Facebook at Michael Breed Golf, and you can obviously listen to A New Breed of Golf on SiriusXM on Monday through Friday. 8 to 10 in the morning, and I'm on Twitter at Michael Breed, and I do share a lot of opinions on a lot of different things. A side of me that most people haven't seen, they pretty much watch me hit a golf ball into a screen, and they pretty much understand that I'm helping them play better golf, but I'm also trying to get people to live a better life and think about things when they're doing it, and I'm not bashful, as I'm sure you guys know.
That's awesome. We love it. Michael, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And we'll be watching, we'll be listening, and I'm going to go to the golf course, and I'm going to stop guarding against just one hit the fairway, and I'm going to swing it faster, and I'm going to try and hit
That's
it a little
I'm
further.
Saying. Don't protect. Move that club. Move that club with some speed. Hey, boys, I love the podcast. I love listening to the podcast. It's been an honor to be a part of it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Michael. Thanks, have man. A great one.
All right, guys.
Bye-bye.
All the best.
Playing Through with Froggy, Brian Golf, and Wacker.